Gayton, what is biosystems informatics? How would you define that?
It's a term, wow, to be honest, it's a term that we just made up. Broadly speaking, what I do is I process biological information because the cost of generating biological information has dropped so precipitously in recent years that it has required large computers to analyze them. And so biologists have quietly, or not so quietly, in the last few years become one of the biggest users of computational power in the world.
So does this have to do with collecting information on like DNA?
Yes. I think a large part of it, but not exclusively, was driven by the ability to gather DNA information more inexpensively, but it's not exclusively limited to DNA.
Now, in gathering this data, how will you do that?
Well, this is the interesting thing about my appointment for the stuff that I do personally. I happen to also be a founder and an associate director of a DNA sequencing organization called the Beijing Genomics Institute. It's now one of the three largest such organizations in the world. And we have, I guess, over 1,000 people. And the interest from the university's perspective, they wanted to work with BGI because it would be extremely expensive for them to capitalize an organization of that size.
So when you say that biology now is the biggest user of computer power, what are you talking about in terms of size or the amount of power?
Oh, geez. I mean, the new sequencing machines, for example, just that we have in China, will generate terabytes of data per day. I mean, it's just outrageous. In fact, it's getting to the center I mentioned with 1,000 people is run by my former student who's actually in computer science. So it's the irony is that one of the biggest biology labs in the world is run by a computer scientist. That tells you the turn of events.
But even you've come from physics into biology. Why did you make that change?
Well, and this is the thing that people don't appreciate. So if you heard about the Human Genome Project, it was the effort to generate the genetic code for one human being. There was a Gairdner Awards, the Canadian Awards, given to 8 such members, and the majority of those people were not trained in biology. They were people like me, math, physics, chemistry. So part of the thing that has happened because the amount of data generated is so large is that people from physical sciences background have come in and I wouldn't say taken over, but certainly have had major impact on it because of the necessity to manage the data has become so critical.
Well, when you look at programs like CSI, which center around the use of DNA in order to find criminals, and how fast they can do that, certainly in the realm of television, how have things changed just even over the last 10 years from when they were first beginning to sequence the human genome, and what you can do today with DNA and this sort of data?
Well, I mean, just what people see on things like CSI is maybe 20-year-old technology. That's not to be disparaging. That's just the reality. And just to put it in perspective is when the human genome was sequenced around 2000, 2001, that was a big international consortium costing, I don't know, each of the private-public consortium spent about $300 million at that time. Actually, this week's issue, cover issue of Nature and Personal Genomics, we have one of the stories for this cover story. It's on personal genomics, where we sequenced an Asian genome for roughly $500,000. So that's how fast the cost has collapsed. Actually, as a side, it's kind of funny, we think, that this issue of Nature and Personal Genomics, which featured the first Asian and the first African genome, came the day after, you know, the Americans elected a non-white president. We figured we should start sequencing non-white genomes.
Well, what is it that has made things faster and cheaper to do? What is the revolution that's going on?
I mean, it's more. I wouldn't call it a revolution. It's in some sense an evolution. I mean, it's just that we have had a history of much like computers get cheaper every year and faster. The biologists, particularly in the DNA field, have gotten better and cheaper and faster every year. It's just you close your eyes 10 years later, and it's shocking. Having said that, the typical computer improvement and biology has typically been about a factor of 2 every couple of years. And the last year, there was roughly a factor of 100 all of a sudden because there was some technical change. and the technical change, I guess the simple way to call it is called massive parallelism, where they basically, instead of doing individual experiments, they capture single DNA molecules on, say, on a cover slide, and then do millions of experiments. So each little molecule becomes a separate experiment on a cover slide. It's so there was a big factor of 100 improvement in about a year. And it's accelerating right now. So, I mean, the point of the current issue of Nature is just projecting ahead. It is not unreasonable to expect, say, in 5 to 10 years, that to generate the complete DNA information for an individual could be done for, say, about $1,000. That is an officially stated goal, which is looking realistic now. And that will have impact on healthcare that we don't entirely know yet, but it will impact.
Well, how many human genomes are there?
Well, everyone's different. That's the whole point. When we sequenced the first human genome, the first question a lot of people ask, well, whose genome? And we anonymized it somewhat, but now we're sequencing individuals, specific individuals, because the cost has gotten down to the point where, you know, a rich person can do it for $500,000. There are enough people out there that can afford to do it if they want to. Question is, if they want to, and what we learn from it, that's another issue altogether.
How will we benefit from that, though? What's it going to do for me?
Yeah, I mean, the thing that I want to emphasize is it's not just about human genome. Is all of life has DNA, and so, you know, that's part of the reason why I have this multi-pronged appointment. So on the one hand, yes, I'm appointed in the School of Medicine, so I'm working with clinicians, but on the other hand, I'm also in the School of Science. So, for example, one of the things that we're going to announce is we're about to launch a project to do 1,000 plant species. The intention there is to transform some of that information into various bioproducts ranging anywhere from medicine, because, for example, most of the drugs that we take are plant-derived, but also at the other extreme, we're talking biofuels. In the intermediate, we can talk green chemistries, aquaculture, bioplastics. So there are many products that we make from plants, for example, that could be improved, or we could invent new products if we had better control of the biology.
What then are some of the problems that you're going to overcome with the work that you're doing?
Well, I think the biggest challenge is what I do is very unusual. I'm extremely multidisciplinary, and so that's reflected just my appointment, the fact that I have a foot in Edmonton and a foot in China, and I have appointments in medicine and science, is actually bringing all these people together. So, you know, the Human Genome Project required large teams of people who don't normally hang out together. You know, you've got labs now run by computer science, mathematician, me being a physicist, and so on, working with biologists, working with clinicians, and we're working with engineers. If we want to commercialize things, we're going to work with process engineers, financier. Just coordinating all of these different people is an issue, particularly in Alberta. It's also a question of getting them physically here, which is part, you know, we have enough trouble staffing as it is. So the challenge in many ways is that's the day-to-day challenge, getting people to work together. I suppose the challenge even before that, you have to have some vision or some idea of what's worth doing beyond just turning the crank on what we've done before.
Why do you do it?
Oh, I like this game of taking these pieces and putting it together, if you like. You know, it's like, oh, I have a friend here who knows this, and I have a friend there who knows how to do this. If I can get them not to kill each other and work together, maybe we could do something that no one can do alone. I mean, that's sort of the thing that I was an engineer as an undergraduate, and I was taught that, and I went to science, and scientists tend to work in their own little silos and they don't collaborate. And when I sort of shook that off and I went to join the Human Genome Project, I went back more to an engineering world where everything is collaborative, and it's a lot of fun just trying to put all these pieces together and see what you can do beyond your own self.
Thank you very much, Gabe.
You're welcome.